Welcome, guys, to another episode of the Army in Time podcast. And this week, we're bringing in another brand, Lauren and Lorenzo from Laurier. Is that how you say it?
That's how you say
Laurier.
It.
I try to, my ESL is a little hard, so I try to think about it real quick. To like, am I going to say it right? Or
no, got on the first try. Excellent.
First try. That's good, because sometimes my ESL betrays me and that accent comes in hard. So Laurier. A brand that I think is very unique. One of the reasons why I wanted to bring him in is a brand that not only does tool watches, a micro brand that I've been talking a lot about, but when you see these watches, it communicates what you always think is the vision of the company. So it's a very streamlined vision that is it communicates very well. So I wanted to have the chance to bring him in, have them talk to you guys directly, and you guys get it from themselves. So, Lauren, Lorenzo, how you guys doing?
All right. Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thank you for
great.
The kind words.
Yeah, I'm very happy to hear that you like our collection and see the vision behind it. That's, you know, that can be elusive. So
definitely. But I think, so thinking back to when I first met you guys, The brand itself, I've been following it since I think it's been years now, because I was in Alaska when I started following Laurier, and but when I first met you guys was the first Intersect in Dallas, and I remember that was actually the first time that I was able to have hands-on with the pieces, and I was very surprised, mainly because when you see brands, a lot of times brands say, okay, we like to make watches that are vintage inspired, or something like, oh, you know, it looks kind of vintage or a little bit cues from it. But everything about Laurier is vintage. Like, everything communicates vintage. And it's just cool. It's something that you don't see a lot. So being able to see the pieces in person, touch and have tactile and you know, with them, an experience with them, it was great. And they even look in person and feel like it is a vintage, more modern obviously, and movement and stuff like that, but vintage piece. And
thank
I think
you.
That's great, and that's what I think is very unique.
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to do. You know, if you were to ask me what our 30-second elevator pitch would be, it would be, you know, if you've always wanted to buy a watch from 1960, today, that would be us. I mean, of course, without the hassle of buying the watch from 1960.
We want to make a watch that feels like you grabbed it out of a time machine. And what you had said earlier about, you know, sometimes vintage inspired means a few cues or some general verbiage or whatever, you know, callbacks, but it's a thoroughly modern watch design, size, and aesthetic otherwise. And we were very set on the kind of watch we wanted to create. And knowing that it's such a niche,
it's a niche within a niche,
right?
Yeah,
it's a very niche desire. Only a small fraction of watch enthusiasts would care and be interested in what we're doing and why. And there is a risk there, because a lot of people want to appeal to as many people as possible, lowest common denominator. Let's appeal to like as many as we can. Yeah. But there is a certain comfort and confidence within that. Once you know exactly what you're going to do, you can say, well, not everyone's going to like it. Not everyone's going to want it or see a need for it. But there are thousands of watch brands. We know that there's something for everyone out there.
Yeah.
This is what we're doing. And so it's, in some ways, it's liberating, that risk.
Yeah.
To just be like, yeah, this is what we're doing. People who want a watch like this will find us.
Yes.
You know, when we first started, we were not sure at all.
Oh yeah.
We had no idea. It was like, well, we're just gonna do this because this is what we want to do, and then hopefully people like it. Mm-hmm. And if not, then we tried.
You know, we really thought it would just be a side gig for most of it. We're like, yeah, we can do this, you know. We were teachers, so we had summers off and our work day ended, you know, before four. So we could be like, well, we can squeeze this in. We can ship a few watches a day. And it quickly became much more than that. And obviously we're very naive as to the amount of work that goes into it besides just, you know, what off the top of your head, you're like, oh, they ship and they send a few emails. How long does that take? You know? But it quickly became, oh, this is going to be a full-time job and it's going to support us. And now we have to, you know, submit our resignation letters. We can't teach anymore.
That's crazy. So what got you guys to that point? What was it that made you guys think, well, I think we can do this? What got you guys thinking about making Laureate?
Well, it's mostly Lorenzo who's the visionary and the design genius, I can say. But we were both teachers and we had this summer off. And so we have that time to kind of stew and to, you know, follow little trails of thought. And this was about midsummer 2017. Mm-hmm. And we had vintage watches at that time, $200 vintage Omegas, you know, off eBay when you could still find them.
Yes, I was going to say, you can't find that no more. So
We did not realize that was the golden age of vintage watch buying.
Exactly.
But Lorenzo's watch, it was just in the bathroom on the counter while he's taking a shower. It fogged up. And that kind of led him down this rabbit hole of, can I replace this watch? Can I find something that can do what it does aesthetically, but be reliable? Can I find something in our budget?
Yeah.
And it was all like, no, no, no. No, none of those things are possible for us. And we have small wrists as well. And this was at the height. Well, I don't know the height, but everything was big at that time.
Yeah.
This is 2017. Everything was still that early 2000s big and brash and chunky.
43 and 44.
Right.
Yes.
If you looked on the forums, people would be like, oh, if you have a small wrist, just get vintage. I'm like, okay. And so that's what we did. And then, you know, we figured out pretty quickly that that's not really the most practical way to, because, you know, you can't actually, like, it's difficult to, like, wear these things if you're not rich.
Yeah. I mean, they're good-looking watches, but, again, there are some limitations. So I was told, Lorenzo, you have these strong feelings and you're not being able to find a watch. What would your ideal watch be?
And so just design your ideal watch. And so that was a Neptune. And
at the time it was, you know, 39 millimeters and people were like, whoa, that's too small for a diver.
Yeah. We're like,
shot. Just give it a shot.
Yeah. I mean, we had no idea where to start. So we just Googled it, like how to, you know, like watch OEM. And so we contacted several. And a few of them were like, are you sure you want to make it this small? Like, are you sure you want to make a 39?
No one's making, there's not, diver. The market is not open to this.
And this was before the Black Bay 58 came out. And
I was going to say.
Popularized that whole thing. So, yeah. And
we wanted to make a watch with acrylic, Hesalite crystal.
Yeah.
That was very hard to find someone that would entertain us on that front as well. So that really narrowed down, you know, who we could work with.
Yeah.
And then we started prototyping, and the first factory we went with told us they could do it. They gave us prototypes that had a sapphire crystal. oh, whoops, no, we can't do it. So we had to start over, but took out a loan and kept on trucking. And and then in spring of 2018, we were able to release it. We launched pre-orders. We didn't do Kickstarter. We wanted it to be real. Yeah. We didn't want it contingent on anything. It's like, no, this is happening.
Yeah.
This is ours. And then in May, we started fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
And then we handed in our letters of resignation. So
nice.
it was a big, a very exciting year for us. We were teaching during the day and working on the business at night, and just very, very little sleep.
Yeah, you guys bet on yourself, and that was and it ended up working out. So that's great. And, I was going to say the same thing that Lorenzo brought up about the BB58. I was like, yeah, because that was before. And then, because now the BB58, when you think about it, you think 39. You don't think any variation of it that is bigger. So, but yeah, back then it was definitely a risk because it was, everyone wanted big. You know, now I feel like it's definitely scaling back to it. You know, so it's definitely scaling back. A lot of people are, actually wearing watches that are below 39.
Right.
And sometimes very recognizable people. So when they speak about it, it's like, so people jump on board. You know, I always make fun of ourselves in the watch collecting world, because in my podcast, because I always say, yeah, we are a weird bunch. And sometimes we like to say, yeah, oh, this watch looks amazing, and I can, but I'm not going to buy it because I can only wear 41 and 42 and above. But your wrist size is 6.5. So don't think you're that, badass that you can only wear a 44 millimeter watch. But, it's because my podcast is it's very niche down too. So like military, police officers, first responders. And a lot of people with that background tend to be more of, I want a big watch, because that's what people think is, a tool watch that can take a beat up.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, a lot of us start collecting and size down very quickly, because the bigger the watch, the more stuff on us that it gets stuck on. So, you start catching on gear and stuff like that. And now you're like, yeah, maybe a smaller watch wouldn't be a bad idea, So, and it goes from there. So I think, one of the things that I was reading a long time ago in you guys' website was a sentence that popped to me a lot, was when it said, when dive watches used to be meant for divers, field watches for explorers, and chronographs for pilots and car racers. And I was like, that's crazy, because it just identifies with me and us so much. Because another thing that I make fun of people is in this hobbies, we always say, especially in the military, we always, I need a watch that can be 600 meters of water resistance for whatever reason, but I work in an office in the Army and I never see water. And it's like, your sink doesn't need to be 600 meters of water resistance. So you'll be fine with 100.
100 meters, your watch will survive, maybe, but you won't.
Exactly. So, I don't know. It's just, I like to poke fun of that stuff, but I think speaks to me, because you look at you guys' watches and they're very purposeful, they're beautiful.
Thank you. I've been thinking about it a lot, actually, as to like, why are we attracted to this era of the 50s and 60s? Like, why that specific era? And only recently have I realized that, like, the reason is basically because it was this golden age where your watch was a measure of what you did, and not what you had.
Yeah.
And I feel like nowadays we've like shifted towards like a watch shows like what I have. Like, you know, like you buy a Rolex and it's like, it's not really because you're a diver anymore.
No,
in the
no, not at
60s,
all.
That's why you bought a Rolex.
Yeah.
But now it's like, well, we'll make you wait in line.
Yeah.
And then when you get the call, it'll be awesome. Which, you know, like that's its own thing.
Yeah.
But that's a different thing from what they were back then.
Oh yeah, 100%. 100%.
And so we, oh, go ahead.
No, sorry. You go.
And so we feel, no, obviously we have a certain aesthetic. We like something that has a little bit of elegance, something that has some versatility, but we feel confident knowing that, hey, when these watches were used as tools, this is the size they were, this is how they looked. And very accomplished individuals use them as tools. So obviously everyone's aesthetics are different, and personal preference and style, you can wear whatever you want, whatever makes you happy, whatever lets you express yourself and you feel the most like yourself when you're wearing it, go for it. But there's a lot out there, and I don't think we need to be so narrow as to, well, this is the only functionality and the only size that means that it's legitimate. You know, people can feel some freedom to play around with it and not have such strict, I don't know, lines. Like you were saying, some people are like, oh, I like that watch, but if it was 40 millimeters instead of 39, then I that's a little too strained. I feel like you might be a little limiting yourself.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, and I'm not gonna lie, like when I started years ago, that's how it was. Mm-hmm. You know, when I make fun of people, it's because I went through it too. You know, like that's how I was. And as time passed by, you know, I said, I'm gonna try this. I'm gonna try this. Like you said, give it
and
a try.
And I think it's also a reflection. Oops. It's also a reflection of how a lot of it's online.
Yeah.
And so you have to use certain references, you know, because you can't feel it, try it on. So you're going by your own experience, and then you're comparing what you have to the specs that are on the screen, and that's all you can go off of. So that's why like Intersect, Wind Up is really good for us, because people can actually feel it and try it on their wrist without having to rely on the matrix of the numbers aligning just perfectly.
So Neptune was the first design, and from there it took off. What is the design that probably was the most difficult to work on, or the most difficult for you guys to bring yourself to release or work on?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say the most difficult one for me was the Hyperion.
Okay.
Because we were 3 years into the business, more or less, 2 or 3 years. And we had been getting a lot of requests for GMT. And it's difficult to design a classically styled GMT without having a Pepsi bezel.
Yeah.
And as a designer, there's like this instinct to be like, oh, that's already been done, so I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think there's also the factor that, well, it's a classic for a reason. And that's why it was done. And so we just had to go with Pepsi bezel with the Hyperion, like regardless of like whatever other social pressures there were.
Yeah.
You know, it's a Pepsi. It's you know, and it's not original. And I'm like, you know, I'll be the first to say, you know, yeah, it is not original, but like that's
but part. It looks good.
Yeah.
It looks good. And you know, that's
not do it. It looks too good.
Right. Yeah. And that's like part of what the thing is, you know, it's like, oh, like make a navy blazer but not Navy, but not Navy. You know what I mean? It's kind of like that.
So just allowing ourselves, you know, there is, like Lorenzo said, difference for the sake of being different, you know, sometimes backfires. You have to see, okay, what looks good? What accomplishes our goal? And I mean, the thing is, our Pepsi bezel isn't, it's even, it looks better than the classic one, right. I would say. Yeah. I think the colors are more cohesive and they're more versatile and they're not as brash. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't do it the traditional way.
Yeah.
But it's close enough to where, you know, it has that essence, you know, you have that quick recognition of, the familiar. But hopefully being even a little better.
Mm-hmm.
See, I thought you would say that the Hydra was going to be the most difficult to design, the Series 3.
Yeah.
Because we really incorporated a lot into that watch. It is our biggest, and it has a lot going on, and having all that going on and still have some kind of elegance and cohesion to the design took a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one we are probably the most trepidatious about was the Zephyr. Because it is such a departure from our two watch case shape, you know, to do a Tenno dress watch. But that was really just, you know, something we did for ourselves. And by the time it came about, we were really excited. And then we're like, wait a minute, what if no one wants it? And they're like, you know what? We did it for us. We were at peace.
But that's a beautiful watch.
Thank you.
The style and everything about it is beautiful. So
Like 50% of me was like, oh, people are gonna hate this. Like, it doesn't even have a second hand.
He's like, we're using a mechanical movement.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't even have a second hand. I'm like, it's gonna be okay.
That's originally I thought that would be the watch that would have come out the quickest for that question, because I thought, you know, that departure of, you know, more of a tool watch type of casing design to more of a dressy vintage watch, which, you know, is definitely a risk. It's definitely a risk and a different shape completely, you know. So
yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, no one else is doing this. Is that for a reason? Is that because no one's buying this?
Are we filling the gap or like falling into quicksand? You know?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. But yeah, it was like Lauren would say, you know, it's like, you know, we just got to do what we feel is right. Like with the Neptune at the time, it's like 39 millimeter diver. No one else is doing it. Yeah. Is that for a reason? But, you know, it's like, well, we like it. And we just have to hope that others do too.
Hey, the Neptune, honestly, the Neptune is a very, very sexy watch. There's no other way to say it. Like, that watch is just represents to me, it represents everything of the company. And and you look at it in pictures, in person, and just straight up says Laurier, period.
Thank you.
It's different. It's different. You know, a lot of times we always say, I want something different. I want something unique. I want something that's not the same. I want something, you know, from now, but it's not the same as everyone. And this is it. You know, these are watches that are something unique that nobody else is doing. Even to the Hesselite crystal, you know. So, which, in my opinion, you know, is the better version of the Speedy, because the Hesselite.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But you know, I guess I get when people don't want to have to take care of the crystal, but it just, everything about it, it just, the lighting, everything just looks better to me.
So it is really nice. It is really nice to look at. We get spoiled because it's what we're handling all day, every day, and we forget the difference, and then we are reminded, and it's a little jarring, but yeah,
Sometimes, watches can start to feel more like jewelry than a tool watch, you know, and for
right.
me,
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's also part of like philosophically why, we stick with the Hessel-Eyed crystal. It's, just to get that ethos across of, well, you're not gonna treat this like jewelry. Don't, fuck it, sorry. Can I swear on this
you can
podcast?
swear on it. It don't matter.
Okay, all
I
right,
swear all the time. So
yeah, all right, yeah. So it's just a fuck it, just wear it.
yeah, it is. It's kind of like you have the freedom, and you have to acknowledge if you're wearing it every day, it's gonna be part of your life. It's gonna get a little banged up. You know, not just the crystal. You can polish the crystal, but the case, the bracelet, it's gonna go on a journey with you. Just accept it, you know, like have fun. And yeah, so it's kind of like how I learned to stop worrying and love the Hessel-Eyed crystal,
But
you know.
yeah. But that's us, like we don't want to say, oh, this is the right way, like this is the only way. It's like, if you want something like totally scratch proof, then that's fine, but that's just not what we're doing.
It definitely contributes to the aesthetic of Orient. It's definitely something that contributes to it. So
Thank
it's pretty
you.
cool.
We got a lot of pushback in the beginning, and now I think people have just stopped. They've surrendered. They're like, okay, they're gonna do it. They're gonna do it. But my response is, you don't have to buy, if you don't like a Laurier, you don't have to buy it. You know, there are other
100%. Like you
watches.
said, there's thousands of companies out there, right? What from the beginning do you guys wanted to make? Because you go to your website, the ads, everything screams vintage. Is that how you guys wanted it from the beginning? Like what that was by design from the beginning?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it was just, like let's pretend that we existed since the 60s
Yeah.
and
A
just like
website in
not
the
change the whole time.
'50s. Well, and Lorenzo's also put a lot of thought into the website. He wanted to make it feel more like a magazine, or more a journey than like an Amazon scrolling page, you know? Like he like the way the product page is set up with this with the text and the sections, and he did, you know, begin designing like the vintage ads to accompany each watch. When was that? About a couple years ago now, to kind of really just, you know, seal the deal. But it was always like a we want it to be an experience, and we want to kind of set the tone because it's not a tip, it's not a modern watch brand, and it's not a brand for mass market, you know. So we really have to do a lot of explaining, you know, for people who stumble upon it and they don't know the story. It's like, yeah, you need to know what we're trying to do so you can make an informed
Like
decision here.
each watch has a story behind it, right? And so, we want to do justice to that story with, with the pictures and with the I have design notes up there. And I'm always like, oh, we should elaborate more on this. We should like do this on YouTube because that's
Yeah,
how
that's on the to-do list.
yeah.
We need to like build out some video content for like, you know, little how-tos and also kind of behind the scenes with the design. So that's on the that's on the list
I will
one of these
say that,
days.
admittedly, the website sometimes is confusing for a few people. Like we'll get emails like, oh, you like one email is like, you should fire the guy who designed your website. And I had to respond like, that
Wait,
was
sadly.
me. How is it confusing for them? Because
Because it doesn't look like, you know, the standard, like, Shopify, whatever. It's like, okay, like,
this gotcha, is gotcha.
Product pictures, and then you select the color here, and then the add to cart. Like, it's all, like, pretty standardized, right?
Yeah.
And ours is not.
But, you know, I think that's something that people get used to, having bad websites, actually, from the big companies. Because big companies have shitty websites. They don't understand... now they understand a website in 2013, apparently. And new websites like this that tell a story, this is now. That's now. The smart companies do that. And to me, this is show of people that are used to bad websites with big companies that don't know how to sell online, as because they have a store everywhere. And they have a sales representative that tells a story, as opposed to the website telling a story.
Yeah. So we kind of force people to take their time on our website. And that might, you know, that's not, you know, super efficient when it comes to conversions and all that. But for us, it's worth it. We want to be able to tell the story. And we don't expect people to just click mindlessly and accidentally add to cart. And you know, like, we want people to make a very thoughtful, informed purchase. We're not trying to, you know, quick optimize conversions and do that. It's like, we're fine with that.
To elaborate on
we're horrible business people.
to elaborate on what Lauren's saying, you know, we'll talk with some people who, like, run e-commerce websites or have their own e-commerce store, or, you know, they'll do email marketing and whatever. And, you know, like, websites now, like, they can track, like, where the mouse, the cursor is, et cetera, et cetera. And so they've, like, figured out, okay, if you put the add to cart button here, like, that's the best place for it.
And that increases conversions by 8%, you know, all that stuff.
Right. And if you do this and this and this, and we're just like, no.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that.
I think I like the website. If that matters, you know, I like the website. I think it tells a story, and I think it's clean, you know. So I like it. Maybe, I don't know. In the Army, I do IT. I'm a nerd in the Army. I'm not a cool guy. So, you know, it's definitely, to me, is very visually appealing.
Thank you.
So I don't know. I don't know what those people, they're probably marketers from 75 years old, you know. Are talking and I mean, our hobby is a very older people heavy, you know, so.
And when you speak with marketers and people back there, they want people to impulse buy.
Yeah, 100%.
And we do not want people to impulse buy our watches. We want people to be very sure that this is what they want when they get it. I don't want to have to deal with a lot of returns because, oh, my bad, you know. I'm fine with having fewer but more thoughtful customers, because they'll know what they're getting into. You know, with watches, we're selling mechanical watches too. Some people don't know what that means.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of, you know, because people come into buy watches for all kinds of reasons, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't want people. This isn't like a fast fashion thing. I want them to take their time.
No, definitely. So from designing the watches, what part of the watch was the biggest curveball for you to learn, for you guys to learn to design watches or to actually make the watches reality? Like, was it maybe the case, the dials, or the bracelets? What was it that gave you the most hard work, I guess?
All of it. All of the above.
All of the above. That's an allowed answer too.
Yeah, no, the most frustrating part is that everything, the supply chain is a mess, basically, because everything is so specialized that everything, like, each component is made in a different place.
And it has gotten worse, not better.
Right.
I was telling you the story of when we started, we were able to prototype really quickly. Like we struck out the first time, we were able to bounce back, and it all happened within a year. And now it's like, and we're incredibly lucky if we're able to go from start to finish within 1 year.
Oh, wow.
Things are just, the pandemic really messed things up in terms of production and manufacturing.
Yeah, but that's part of the nature of things. And so like the hardest part was just like accepting that and just going with the flow. My favorite example is we got one production batch where the aluminum bezel inserts were not great. And so we're like, okay, we have to send these back.
Yeah.
And so we send them back, and our manufacturing partners are like, okay, well, let's evaluate these 17 different factories just for the aluminum bezel insert.
Yeah.
So it's to that extent where, like, so now imagine that for like each and every, like the dial,
right,
the hands,
each part is highly specialized in terms of the manufacturer.
And then you got to put it all together, and you know, if one of them is missing, then you can't start.
Yeah.
But let's see, in terms of engineering though, I mean, first it was engineering around an acrylic crystal, finding expertise in that. The next, Lorenzo's always been very good with proportions and case design, but when we're working with tool watches and we're very much trying to make them as thin as possible, there's a lot of back and forth with how we can design the case and the inside of the case and how it all comes together to really try and shave as many hundredths of a millimeter as we can off of it. Because sometimes the easiest way is not the most, you know, effective way. Yeah. And you're dealing with factories that have high MOQs and they put out a lot and they're like, we just want to do it our way.
Yeah.
You know, you little brands, you order in the hundreds or the thousands, you are nothing to us. We're like, no, we need new tooling.
Yeah.
We need to do this differently. So we get pushback on that. We get delays for that. But it's always worth it, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess one great example would be we're trying to engineer a toolless microadjust clasp.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Because that's like one request that we get a lot. And basically anything on the market does not fit our bracelet. It's too thick or too long.
Right. Our bracelet's very sleek and elegant. We want to keep it like that. Mm-hmm. And especially for small wrists, you can't work with the huge clasp. It totally throws the whole vibe of the watch off if the clasp is as big as the watch head, you know, like it needs to be some proportion. So we're trying to design our own clasp that hopefully we can make more minimal, less bulk, and
so we've been at this for a long time now, and part of that is because, you know, we'll go to the clasp factory and they'll be like, well, okay, let's see if we can like jerry-rig something that like works with like an existing mechanism.
They don't want to make new tooling,
right? And so they'll make a prototype and we're like, okay, well, here's why it doesn't work. You see, like, it's not smooth, blah, blah, blah.
This is why I wanted you to do it like this. Please just do it like this.
And then they'll do an adjustment, and they're like, okay, it still doesn't work. Here's why. And then they'll do another one. And then
still not what we want.
Right. So finally, fine, we'll just do what you wanted to do in the beginning.
Right. And it's been like 6 to 9 months of push and pull.
Oh, wow.
Then slowly making minor adjustments and us having to say no, you know, but everyone wants to conserve their own labor and to be as efficient with what they have as possible. And we do not have a ton of sway because we are a small brand and we're not going to put in, you know, 50,000
an order quantity. For 50,000 pieces.
I mean, it makes sense. That's something that is I heard a lot from micro brands on having to argue and go through a lot of push and pull to design things the way they want it, because obviously they want to do it their way. It's easier. They just want to truck along.
Mm-hmm. It's like, we are willing to pay for the tooling. Let's just do this, you know?
That's crazy. But, you know, that's what contributes to uniqueness in watches, because if it's for them, they'll give you what big brands already made, and it looks just like another brand.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't have uniqueness to your product. It doesn't matter where you place the add to cart button. People are just going to buy because it's another company. So, you know, I think I see where you guys are coming from for sure. You know, and one of the things that I like about the Neptune, for example, is the refinement of the bracelet, right? The thin bracelet, because sometimes you can get a bracelet that looks good, might feel good, but it's just too thick. The links are too thick for the watch.
Mm-hmm.
There was no thought put into it when it comes to that. And the proportions are off. And sometimes it could be to me, it could be the most comfortable bracelet ever. It just doesn't go with the watch. I'm not going to care for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that it's good to see that you guys are taking that into consideration, because you guys' bracelets are very thin and refined. It goes with the watch.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it used to be thicker. And because, you know, we were afraid that people would be like, oh, it's too light, it's too rattly, or, you know, it doesn't feel like premium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like, we get that now.
Only partly. A lot of people like it, and we think it's better. And a lot of people who have both are like, oh, can I order the new bracelet and put it on my old watch? So that's weird. Mm-hmm.
A lot of bracelets we notice, to your point, are made thick now because people will be in the store and instinctively people equate like heaviness with quality.
Yes.
And so, you know, we'll be trying on watches, oh, this is nice and heavy, blah, mm-hmm. blah.
Yeah.
Like, so this must be quality, when, you know, in reality, you want the opposite if you're going to wear it every day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I 100% agree. You know, and sometimes I feel like on top of that, there'll be one bracelet from a company, one of the bigger companies is a good bracelet. And for whatever reason, people compare every bracelet to that one bracelet. Well, if you buy that bracelet, it'll also cost you as much as three times this watch. So you can't expect a company to remain in a certain price point, not like that other watch, and then have a bracelet just like that other watch that cost $2,000.
Yeah, that's a good point. We are operating within a price range, and, you know, that's what you're going to get. You know, there are very, very high-end watches that will cost you $10,000 or more. And if you want a watch like that, then you can buy it.
Yeah.
But our watch is not $10,000.
Yeah,
you know?
100%, yeah.
We are working with materials and manufacturing that allows us to price our watch for what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the super, you know, a lot of it comes down to labor hours as well,
mm-hmm.
With the pricing and all that. So there are lots of things to take into consideration. It's like, we are being very competitive with our pricing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we can do.
Yeah.
This is what we can do.
Yeah. And with that said, you know, like when we're talking about operating within a certain price range, it's not like we compromise on anything.
Yeah.
Really, when it comes to what our goals are,
right,
and what we want to do.
We make the watch we want to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like if our goal was to like make a watch with the same level of finishing as Grand Seiko, then that would be a whole other thing. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
that's just not going to happen at our price range, but
yeah, 100%. That's why it's annoying to me when people will go and see a micro brand and just criticize something when the micro brand put money into a watch, created a different watch, it went up $100, and now they're all up in arms because it went up $100. Mm-hmm. It's like, but you paid thousands for a watch that hasn't changed in 10 years. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't, never get that point of view. It, to me, it's just funny and hilarious.
There's so, definitely a higher level of scrutiny, I'd say, for micro brands.
Yes.
And that's fine because we are buying for enthusiasts, and that's what that's the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people should be questioning where their money is going. Yeah, that's valid. Mm-hmm. You should not buy. Well, that something's value is what a person's willing to pay for it, right? So everyone values different things.
Mm-hmm.
If someone, you know, thinks a Rolex is worth that much to them, then it is, and they are paying the right price, right? that's what value is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, when you talk to micro brand owners, it's like, it's not like it's a passion project for the most part.
Yeah.
Right? Like we're here just like pulling our hair out. And it's like,
we're
not trying to get rich quick here. It's like, it's just thing costs. I'll give a very specific example. Like people, like Jack Mason is a great brand. They're awesome people. And people will get on their case for their GMT, which is priced higher than ours with the same movement. And people will be like, why is Jack Mason priced so much higher? And it's like, well, they regulate it to a standard of -5 + 5. And it's like, that costs money.
Costs money, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, people have to do that, and you have to pay people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like if we did that, like that would our
price would go
our
up.
Price would be the same. Yeah,
and but that's a great example, because you know, I brought the whole being regulated thing when I talked to Peter from Jack Mason, and you know, it's crazy because you go and pay, I don't know how much, for XYZ brand that is a recognized brand name with not a regulated movement to that standard. But then you complain about a sub $1,000 watch that has a better regulation on the movement and keep better time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just don't understand that type of mentality. And I that was a perfect example because, don't get me started, because I'll just talk shit about
Yeah, so that's the level of scrutiny. And,
right.
And
it's like no one's trying to take advantage of anyone. It's just like,
right.
Cost money.
We need to pay for things.
Yeah.
We do certain things to be able to price our watches as low as we do, mm-hmm. because it is important for us to price our watches as accessible as possible.
Yeah.
Because we want people to not feel stressed when they use it and wear it, you know, on a daily basis. We don't want it to be a source of anxiety. We want people to be like, yes, I can afford this watch. I'm going to wear it as intended.
Yeah.
So that is important to us, but you know, we do things like, well, we don't have a storefront.
Yeah.
You know, Lorenzo does the photography and the website. You know, like we fulfill the watches, you know, we ship every watch, we pack it up and ship it and QC it, you know, it's a two-person operation here. And that allows us to be able to price our watches so aggressively, but things come at a cost, right? Yeah, so
100%.
The cost is our mental health. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Like, these are decisions we have to make, you know, depending on our priorities. That's all.
And I mean, you look at, and you hit it on the nail. You look at how everything has changed. Like Lorenzo was saying earlier, you know, Rolex owners used to be a different, you know, it used to be different back in the day. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, more expensive watches. So you see people not really wanting to do anything with a so-called tool watch and just protecting the watch because it costs so much.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So are you honestly creating stories or memories with that watch that you can pass down? And it's not about the brand and the watch. It's about the stories that came with the watch for that kid or that family member that takes it later. Because for me, that's what I like about watches. And I think, you know, when you look at military members, to me, that's how we look at things, because everything is a story for us. Everything attaches to something. We love to have things that we can attach a story to. That's why when people leave a unit, we give them a memento of that unit so that they can have the memories of the unit attached to that thing, right? Whatever it is that you gave them. Some more specialized units give watches, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a thing in the military. And for a watch, just to have a watch to protect it, yeah, sure, you achieve the goal of buying that watch.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're not leaving your life with that watch. So, mm-hmm. and it's not many of us in the military that do it, but mm-hmm. it's seeing, you know, people that do that, it's like, I'm just not that person. So yeah. having yeah. brands that you can have in your wrist and live mm-hmm. your life and actually have stories to tell is more valuable to me than to have a watch that I just have in my house. And I tell people I have it in my house and then not use it, you right. know?
Okay, and you're, yeah, and you're the exact type of person that we're making watches for, because that's our mentality too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're not, these are not designed with like collectors in mind.
Yeah.
They're designed for people who want a watch to wear
yeah.
daily.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's what we're going for.
Yeah. And make stories with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. To your point, that's been our exact experience as well. Like, absolutely. It's like with military members, it's like we'll occasionally yeah. like get a watch back to like work on or like replace a part. And it's like, yeah, this is like, this watch has been worn. This yeah. is awesome. Yeah,
oh, I love sure. it.
Yeah.
yeah. So when you look at, let's say, shows like Intersect, Is that good for you? Like, how do you guys see those shows happening for you guys? Does it give you more chance to tell your story? Are you guys getting a lot of people that didn't see your brand before that saw it for the first time in the shows?
You know, this is another way that we're bad business people. we just like being out there and talking to people. Well, not even bring watches to sell. like here's an offer, you know, try them on. That's what they're there for.
A lot of yeah. brands do that, though. A lot of brands yeah. do that. So it's not just you guys.
Well, our website is where people can go to buy our watches.
Right.
If they yeah. like them. Mm-hmm. But it is really good for us to be able to talk
yeah.
to watch enthusiasts, to give an opportunity for people to be able to try the watches on, see how they are in the metal, because we are online based. So
yeah.
any opportunity that we can have them like out there, like this is what they look like, you know?
Yeah. You know, yeah. I bring it up because, you know, you have like Last Intersect, you know, Watch Rolling, Jason from Watch Rolling, he was there. And he was telling me, and Cody from AWWC, and they were telling me, you know, that was the first time they got hands on with you, with your watches. And they were very surprised. Jason, by the way, you know, was very surprised with the shape, with the Tenno shape and, you know, the dial of that watch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's to me, it's great because I hear a lot of people that never had hands on with you guys watches.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time seeing it. And they're like, oh man, this actually looks really good. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, with photography, with watch photography, a lot of watches look kind of all the same, yeah. you know, exactly. you have the metal and the crystal and the
yeah.
any kind of reflection off the dial, and
yeah, a lot of tricks.
Really,
that you
so
can
much
do.
You can do.
Right.
But once you see it in person, then you can say, "Oh, this is how it, you know, this is the three dimensional. This is how it looks and feels on my wrist. This is what that 39 looks like on my wrist. You know,
yeah, that's why we
with that 37." Right. Bezel or whatever, right. You know, like this.
Yeah.
But so that's why we try to make it out as much as we can. You know, just, you know, I will say that my one wish, if we could, is if people could try on a watch and just forget everything, forget all the numbers, forget all the specs, dimensions, et cetera, and just like, does it speak to you?
Yeah.
Like that. That's my wish. Because sometimes people will like try on a watch. Like for example, like the Hydra, which I'm wearing now, is a 41 millimeter case width.
Yeah.
And I have a 6-inch wrist. And so on paper, that doesn't work. Right. Yeah. And I'm wearing it on a NATO. But you know, I wear it and I love it.
Yeah.
So I wish that, you know, people would just like try it on and not be like, oh, is this,
well,
does this like fit? It's like, well, look at it. Like,
does it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess what Lauren's referring to, sometimes people try it on, be like, is this 39? And it's like,
does it matter? Do you like
is it on your wrist? How does it feel on your wrist? But they're just trying to calibrate.
Yeah.
You know, the reference in their head for future reference, you know, they're going to other table, you know,
right,
it's for their own purposes. But at that time, you just kind of want people to, okay, we're in the moment, you have this item now, and you can surprise yourself, or
I still haven't found a good sort of answer to that. Like sometimes I'll say, you know, yeah, just try it on, because you know, our 39 isn't the same as another brand's 39.
Yeah.
It's like on paper, like if you take out the calipers, they're both 39.
Yeah.
It depends on what you're measuring, how you're measuring it. And so, you know, like you see it, like, does it speak to you?
And you know, I'll give you, like for me, I have bought watches that I didn't think would fit me, or that I didn't think the measurements would work for me. And then I went and tried them on, and it spoke to me. I'm like, who cares what the measurement is? I freaking love this watch on my wrist. I'm gonna buy it, you know. So it's definitely, a lot of times, especially for people that don't have a lot of experience with watches, like you said, measurement is not the same all the time. It might be the same number, but how you measure it and where you're measuring differs a lot. So, you know, for a lot of people that don't have experience with watches, it is important as hell to try it on, because
when
you try it on, it looks completely different than on paper. Like you said, Lauren, with the pictures and Photoshop, you can make anything look great, but trying it in person is a whole different story. So,
because like even the dial color, like some, yes, you have these real objective measurements, but then you have certain things that affect you visually, right?
Yes.
You don't see things objectively. Your eyes and your brain are always compensating.
Yeah.
Like a white dial watch will look bigger than the same watch with the dark dial, you know, and it's like, you have to know what you're working with. And so, yeah, that's why we like these shows, because people can just try them on, go down the line, be like, all right, how is this working on you?
And it's like what you were saying earlier, Alex, like the only reason why I like bring up these critiques is because I was like that, you know? Like,
yeah, what are you saying?
I was like overanalyzed, I was like overthinking, you know, like, oh, does this fit? Like, oh, it's 36 right for me. I'm all
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So, he's talking to himself.
I do the same all the time. It doesn't matter. Like, I'll be talking in the car and people might think that I have a Bluetooth going on, and I'm not. I'm just talking to myself about watches, you know. It doesn't, it's people will think I'm crazy, I'll tell you that much. So yeah, that's for sure. So what's in the future for Laureate? What do you guys want to see Laureate in the future? Or where?
Well, we're gonna keep I don't want to say experimenting, but we're going to keep pushing things a little. Probably the biggest upset to our collection is that we're going to be, can I say this? Too late. We're going to be
why upset?
Not, replacing not upset. Our chronograph. Because it's because we're changing the collection. Okay. That's why it's an up because it's yeah. It's an upheaval.
Okay.
We are changing. Right. We're going to be replacing our chronograph.
Yeah.
Right now, our Gemini has two sub dials. It's a manual Seagull chronograph. We're phasing that out. We're going to be replacing it with an automatic, three sub dials, tachymeter.
Yep.
That's coming out in the fall. That's been our big thing, but we have a few other things in the pipeline as well. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm not upset about the chronograph.
Yeah, I mean, I see it from both ways. I know what you were trying to say. Kind of like it's gonna be a jump. Departure from what it used to be.
Right, because our core collection is pretty set. We're very happy with our models, with our base collection. So that's good, except we're switching up the chronograph.
Yeah. Well, you got to improve something, right? And you got to change something, try other things and stuff like that. So that's always good, you know, and you can't make everyone happy. But that's great. That's great for you guys.
Well, where do you want to see us go next, or what do you want to see us do next?
You know, I think that definitely, let's say when it comes to the Neptune, I would love it to stay the same way because it's amazing. Like I love that.
Yeah, it will. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that watch the way it is.
Check.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
I like the fact that you guys offer the same models, date and no date. I think that is a great move because a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of confrontation of whether they like date or no date. Honestly, I don't know, because to me, like Lauren was saying just now, your core collection speaks so well about who Laurier is that it's hard. You guys have a hard job. Because it's hard to see how to move forward to be in a different spot in the future because everything works so well right now.
It's too good.
It's hard. You know, it's hard. It's a hard job that I wouldn't want to be you guys. So I don't, you know.
Well, that's where our special editions come in, because we can still experiment and play.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
so we'll be switching up the Hyperion Special Edition because we've had the Skyward for a while, so it's time for something new.
Yeah,
we have a collaboration coming out this summer that should be cool, but I don't know if I can say anything more about it.
You don't have to
right now. But things are in the works. We're just trying to get stuff back in stock because right now the inventory is very low.
Yeah.
So that's the next big push, and things will be coming out over the next few weeks and months. So
that's great. I think you know, if I was gonna say anything, I think that just, you know, being able to put more, you know, watches in hands for people so that people can experience what Laurier is and get addicted, you know. I think that would be great because you know, I've been saying for a long time, I think, you know, the value right now, true value for what my niche at least is looking to do with watches, it's in micro brands. You know, I don't think there's a lot of big brands out there that can provide value other than you bought a name watch that you always thought you wanted. Other than that, I think the value is in micro brands. And I think seeing you guys constantly try to develop things, try to work on things and new things and come up with new ideas for your watches is a great thing. That's why I like to bring you guys in and talk to everyone about the process of how hard it is to get your watch out there, because a lot of people don't really know. And then getting to know you guys and hearing from you guys directly, that goes a long way. people are able to fall in love with the brand. And I think that that goes further. A lot of times you can't buy a big brand watch and talk to the owners or email the owners or get a response. So mm-hmm. other than an automatic response, being able to do that with a micro brand goes a lot further. So to me, provides value that you don't get from bigger brands. So
that is a really satisfying part of the job, is being able to interact with people. You know, people, not everyone knows a lot about our brand. They don't, it's just us two, you know? And so they'll get an email back from us and they're like, whoa, I didn't expect an email from the owner. All right. And it's really fun. We get to hear a lot of stories. Because we are, if we were a physical store, we'd just be a mom and pop shop.
Yeah.
You know, we're just online.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
You know, we'd be a little mom and pop shop. Sometimes there'd be a line down the block. Other days there'd be like a closed, come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's how we operate. It's very personal to us.
Yeah.
And it's really satisfying that way that we can, you know, do things
just like,
on
just like talk a, and interact. And that's why it's great that you know you invited us and have us on now. This is
for sure. I appreciate you guys coming in. You know, but before we close though, before we start closing, you guys have anything that you guys want to put out there? You guys want to tell a story about something or say anything?
You covered it.
Thank you again.
You're
welcome. You know, I appreciate you guys coming in,
taking the time to talk to us.
We got some things coming. Okay. just subscribe to the newsletter if you want to know.
And you know, is an aesthetically pleasing newsletter for sure, because you know you're gonna get a lot of cool stuff in there. So I appreciate you guys coming in. I appreciate you guys doing what you guys do, being different, unique, providing a unique perspective on watches for people out there. And I love what you guys do. So I appreciate you guys taking out of your time, because I know you guys are busy. And
likewise, thank you.
So I appreciate you guys. And guys, if you guys are interested in learning more about Laurier, their website is great. Don't listen to that other 75-year-old guy. It's a great website. Go to the website, take a look at the models, because they all look great. I talked about Laurier a lot. I don't know if I always pronounced it correctly, but I got the green light that it's Laurier. So go take a look at them. I know I talk a lot about them. I talk about the bracelets. I talk about the watches and the aesthetics of it, but they're truly great designs, truly great watches. Take a look at them, and I'm pretty sure a couple of you guys are going to fall in love with some of their watches. So go to Laurier.com and take a look at it. And that's pretty much it for this week. Appreciate you guys. And
appreciate you. Alex. Thanks so much.
All right.
So much.